Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host and good friend, Spencer Third Eye Williams.
Hello!
He actually has googly eyes on his laptop over there, so...
For now.
We got a great show in store, and we also have with us intern/stenographer/part-timer/everything else who decides to take a drink, Amy.
Yes, I am the everything seasoning to this table.
The everything seasoning?
Yeah, you get everything seasoning at Trader Joe's. It's like the everything bagel seasoning.
I don't know about that, but we're going to be... We are excited. Both of you guys are nuts. Yes. We're excited to talk about this week's film, and it just dropped... Well, it's about to drop this week, and we got a chance to get a special screening of it, and that is Everything Everywhere All at Once. So stick around as we dive into that, but before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out at our website. We got over 300 episodes, allegedly, all on anything in terms of movies from... you know, it's funny. Someone I know who I work with was like, hey, so what happened to episode 300?
No, it's there.
It's there.
The mythological episode lesson 300 is out there. We just...
Not because someone forgot to ask another person to do a thing, and then there's a whole big holdup.
You know, filmlosophers.com. Head over there for all of our great content. Also, check us out on any streaming platform where you find podcasts. That is iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn. You can tune in all those places. Also, check us out on our socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. That's 101. 101.
Yep.
Got it?
Okay. Yeah.
Speaking of ones and zeros, Spencer, actually...
That's a real deep joke right there.
Hey, we aim to please all types, including the nerds and geeks who get binary. Binary?
I ones know.
You're looking at me.
I'm just...
group on that side of the table. We have a great show in store, but before we get to that, we actually have an awesome opportunity to hear Spencer's big score. So, Spencer, I hear you got something for us this week.
I've got something for us this week.
Oh, boy.
So, this week, in honor of someone returning to film I haven't seen in over 20-plus years, I thought we'd talk about The Goonies.
Yay!
Yeah. Going 80s.
Yes. I feel like I've been leaning towards 80s a lot, or 80s sounding things.
Let's be honest. The 80s had a great soundtrack to it.
Across the board.
There wasn't really much of it that was like,
I'm sure we could find it.
But, you know, let's just keep it there. Go ahead, Spence. Keep it.
All right. The Goonies was a film I first saw on TV. In the 90s, but like only bits and pieces, because back in the day, like, you had to look at the TV guide in the newspaper, and if your family didn't buy it that week, you just didn't know what was coming on.
That's very true. It was madness,
and we somehow survived until now. But I caught bits and pieces until, like, finally I, like, learned the name of the movie, because I didn't even know that.
Oh, man.
And so, I finally was able to see it from the beginning, and this intro track we're listening to, the Fratelli Chase, just brings you into the movie of, like, an adventure, and you're ready to go. Like, I love this track so much.
Yeah.
And, like, it was like, when I finally got, like, the beginning of the movie, I was like, yes, I'm finally here. And this movie was, like, pumping a score that was like, you found the movie.
For such an upbeat score like this, a piece, there was a lot of, like, dark things in there, like one of the Fratellis pretending that he hangs himself in the jail cell. I'm like,
how else are you going to get out?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the best way to intro into a kid's movie.
Yep.
Let's have one of our main antagonists pretend that he hangs himself in a cell.
And again, that sounds right up the 80s alley, to be honest.
Very
right.
True. He's on point.
Oh, man.
Okay, and then the next track I want to talk to about is...
We could talk to it, too.
Whatever. Yeah, I guess we could talk to it, but I feel like that'd get things weird. Is Cyndi Lauper's Good Enough.
Yeah.
It's
End song for this movie and kind of plays you out. This is the thing I heard the most from the movie because I kept catching the end of it. but it's a great song in its own right. Don't know what her
Why is this lady singing when the boat's going away? I can see little Spencer now.
No, I was just like this is actually one of the songs that actually got me to stick around during a credit sequence.
Uh-huh. Really?
Back when they actually played credit sequences on TV.
Yeah.
Instead of just like minimizing it and like, here's the next thing. Like,
yeah.
So like, I remember listening to this song and like, you know, watching it until like, you know, it just faded out. And so like, both of these songs just have like a really special place in like my childhood. So, you know, I just like, I think this is like one of the first songs I heard from Cyndi Lauper, you know?
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
That's okay. This is a good entry. I'm with it.
I mean, you can't go wrong with the way this whole musical score actually rounds out in this kind of kid / kind of grown up type movie. It's, I think the 80s were kind of the epitome of like best of both worlds, kind of, you know, oh, this is a kid's movie, but kids, but adults are definitely going to get a laugh too and everything, and nothing like torturing a child by pretending to put their hand in a, you know, blender. It's great. Yeah, wonderful.
The 80s. Okay, yeah, that's all I really want to talk about. Short and sweet this week.
Oh, there you go. That was Spencer's big score. Remember, you can check out more of his stuff over on our Instagram page at Filmlosophy101. But we are now going to transition into our, honestly, biggest anticipated conversation we've had in a long while.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about this movie for a good long minute. We've been outside of the show, maybe even during the show. I don't know. But this movie has been on all of our tongues. It's been on all of our minds. And we couldn't help but go and find a way to see it ahead of schedule. And so this kicks off our review of Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. This was one of those types of movies where you don't really know what you're getting into. And to be quite frank, you have a very, very like elementary amount of information as soon as this, like, you see the trailer. You're like, okay. And I have intern Amy with a third eye, with googly eye on her forehead. So I want to get into this. I know there's a lot that we're going to be talking about. So Spencer, I didn't make the synopsis very long, so take it away with that official synopsis goodness.
An aging Chinese immigrant is swept up in an insane adventure where she alone can save the world by exploring other universes, connecting with the lives she could have led.
That's right. Written and directed by Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert, the film stars the incredible talents of Michelle Yao, Kai-Hu Kwan, Stephanie Hsu, Jenny Slate, Harry Shum Jr., James Hong, and Jamie Lee Curtis. We cannot forget Jamie Lee Curtis. She might be the only white person in this that matters, because Jenny Slate's but Jamie Lee Curtis absolutely matters in this movie. A couple of little key things, and I don't want to spend too much time on the little facts because I really just want to get in the conversation, but to keep plot details under wraps before the trailer was released, the actual official IMDb synopsis read, quote, a woman tries to do her taxes.
She does try.
Yeah, she tries.
She does try. That is 100% accurate.
I bet this movie is going to like really draw a lot of attention to either people who have to go visit the IRS or have to remember about, is it April 14th yet? It's not even April 14th. No. This is a reminder. Do your taxes, people. Do your taxes.
I already did them.
Ki-Hoi Kwan's first major role. This is actually his first major role in over 20 years. If you don't know who Ki-Hoi Kwan is, Ki-Hoi Kwan, he is the one who plays Short Round in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
And Data and in The Goonies.
Yes.
As to, just to draw that connection there with Spencer. one of the things when in the film when Alpha Raymond, which is one of the variations of the husband played by Ke-Huy Quan, when Alpha Raymond speaks to Evelyn and says, "Your clothes never wear as well as the next day. Your hair never falls in quite the same way." This is actually an allusion to the Three Doors Down song. Is it Three Doors Down?
It's not Three Doors.
It's Blink 182, isn't it?
No, it is not. It's like, I think it's 9 days something. Hold on.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe
it. It's 9 days. It's called. It's by a band called 9 Days. It's Absolutely.
Or a Absolutely, story of, but yeah, Absolutely, Story of a Girl.
9 Days.
Absolutely, Story of a Girl by 9 Days, which features the same lyrics. Actually, the entire underlying plot of the film pretty much aligns with the song. Mm-hmm. In fact, Amy so aptly and numerously pointed out over and over as we were leaving the theater, over and over and over, that there were allusions to the song and there were certain parts where the song was being played. And
in,
the,
in varying genres and styles, which
and
was brilliant.
Amy said it over and over and over. And at that point, I was like, I think we need a new intern.
but it was a story of a girl who cut the river and drowned the whole world.
No, she didn't.
No, so, she made a bagel.
Exactly.
The biggest bagel anyone ever made.
Ah, man, that thing was burnt. I looked at it, I'm like, I wonder if there's actual people here thinking this is appetizing, because this looks like one of those squid ink
bagels. Yeah, it does look like that. I was thinking that, too.
this movie, this has got to be one of the biggest anticipated films of this quarter of the year. Because we're now finishing up the last part of the first quarter of the year. And usually within the first quarter, I think we've talked about it several times, you don't really get a lot of Oscar-worthy type films. You don't get a lot of films that are really kind of in the vein of, oh, this is going to go, you know, and try to win awards come next year. Typically, the first quarter is usually meant for, you know, film fodder. It's usually kind of the test phase of the year. That's why, like, Deadpool dropped in the first quarter because they didn't know if Deadpool was going to be successful. A lot of movies that they're not sure, even if there is a possibility of a Oscar possibility for the film, what they tend to do is they'll do a quote unquote limited release before the 31st of December and then do a main release. This movie did a limited release early or late March.
Week in March.
And then they're doing a full release nationwide on the 8th, which is this week, this Friday. Mm-hmm. So it's really weird kind of how the Oscars work and how award season and campaigning goes, because if anybody had screened this film before sending it to those limited releases, why didn't they think, like, hey, you know, this is a really good movie. Maybe we should kind of give it more room to, you know, create this conversation and this, you know, expectation.
See, this is where things get weird with this movie. Because even though it's in a wider release, like, coming up this Thursday, it's still not that wide.
Nope. No, it's only in about 5 theaters.
I know. Like, it's now in Sacramento a lot more, but, like, it's in, like, 2 showings for, like, the day of Thursday. And I'm like, why?
And 5 different theaters citywide, all the way from as far south as Elk Grove, ultimately every Century and Cinemark theater, which rules out AMC, rules out
AMC
Regal.
AMC has it. It, but we don't have an AMC close by.
No, that's right. We don't have an AMC close by.
It's in San Francisco, which I had voted which for us. I
really didn't see this, and I was like, let's go to San Francisco.
Yeah,
and
that
then
was not.
We got lucky
and
noticed that it was at IMAX.
We were able to get passes into a special screening in Sacramento at the IMAX. No less at the IMAX, where our good friend Terry was doing a actual special event screening. We even got to go home with one of the marketing posters. It's really great. It was you're looking at me weird.
Like, were you supposed to say that you have?
I didn't say his name.
Yes, you did.
Did I say?
Yeah, and well, you also said that you
it was one of the little ones from, like, the Batman.
Oh, the one that was on the table.
Yes, so what are you talking about?
Because there was like, a nice one that was on the rolly thing, but I think somebody else took it. Yeah. Also, I would like to point out prior to this, the reason I think why it is not having like mass release is because Spencer and I, as soon as we saw the trailer, we were like, this movie.
Well, okay, yes. Okay. So,
and in juxtaposition, you had your...
As the seasoned critic here at this table, as the person who has been reviewing movies longer than probably either... Well, since more than Amy has probably been watching movies. Honestly, I always have a sense of caution when it comes to really great-looking movies. Because actually, you know, I learned it from you. Jerk. I learned because every time prior to probably within the last 4 years, prior to our great conversation, Spencer, I used to really like trailers. I used to really, and then ever since all your big push
don't
for
tell
like
me I ruined trailers.
No, you didn't. What you did was you made me more aware of how much, as part of the experience of the film, is so is the trailer, every mm-hmm. piece of marketing, which somebody who's been in marketing like myself, I should have known that. But I didn't pay much credit to the trailer because I just always used to see it as just another experience as part of the film, almost like additional footage or additional content. Then we started seeing stuff from Marvel, and we started seeing all these other trailers, and you would just point things out and this and that, and then we would see the movies, and I'm like, dang, Spencer was right. Oh my gosh. And it just got me thinking.
Get out of here with these lies, Disney.
So it had gotten me thinking. It had always gotten me into the mindset now of just being wary. So when this trailer came about, yeah, you two were goo goo gaga over the moon for this because it looked. But for me, I was like, okay, this looks interesting. But at the same time, I don't know where this leads. When you have a very vague trailer that doesn't give a lot of context, you ultimately are left to whatever imaginings are going to transpire when you see the film.
Which is the best part?
No.
For me, it is. I mean, that's the same thing, like, because this is coming from A24, there's a little bit more of an expectation. You kind of don't know what's coming down the pipe.
She was one of those people who was excited to see the Hulk in Avengers Infinity War. So, just saying.
I'm one of the people that pushed to make sure that the Green Knight was seen because I got really, really excited. And that trailer, if you didn't know anything about the Green Knight, you're like, I don't know what this is. This is a little scary.
The thing is, like, with the Green Knight, there was enough context in the trailer for somebody like you who is aware to be like, oh, okay, yeah, I see that, I see this, and I see these things. There was nothing in this trailer for this movie.
There was Michelle Yeoh. That's all I need.
Yeah, but that's not all you need. No.
Well, and Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis was also in Freaky Friday, and I never want to see that movie again.
Oh, again?
No.
The Lindsay Lohan one?
Yeah, no. Yeah. I'm talking about the old one.
I like that one,
okay,
too.
Okay, you need to stop. So, when it came to this film, expectations, because honestly, there were a lot of them. And I want to start with you guys on your end, because I want to hear from the positive side before it jumps back over this way.
Okay.
So, let's start with you, Spencer. What were some of your expectations prior to going into this movie?
I don't know. And that's, like, the most honest I can be. Because, like, if you watch that trailer that they put up on YouTube, it's madness.
Yeah.
And that's what I was like. Like, okay, we need to talk about someone else real quick. Disney. Like, Multiverse of Madness is coming up next for them. And I was expecting, I'm expecting something that's a bit on the crazy side. Mm-hmm. And the trailer for this movie, even though it doesn't have all of like Marvel's workings, it was a multiverse movie that was going to be crazy. And I was like, I think I can be on board with that.
Yeah.
And that, like, it had some actors I really liked in it. And so I was like, okay, like, let's go for this one. Plus, like, A24, like, I know they have like hits or misses, but like sometimes when they hit, they really know how to hit. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping it was going to be kind of like, you know, The Last Black Man in San Francisco for me.
Yeah.
Or like that one hit really hard, and I love that movie.
Have you actually even seen that one yet?
Yes.
I'm just asking.
Oh my gosh.
Well, no offense, but I've been trying to get you to watch that movie for a long time now.
I borrowed it off your Vudu.
Yeah, because I bought it. I had to.
Yeah, I had to. I asked, so I wouldn't have to pay for it again. And now I'm like, I probably should just buy it.
No, but yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of hits and misses with A24. And this is one of those ones that it was one of those crapshoots.
Yeah, they've set themselves up as a company where, like, I'm willing to take a chance on them.
Very true. I mean, when it comes to A24, you either have, like, heart-wrenching, you know, drama and, like, emotion, or you have probably the most terrifying things you'll ever see that are built in a sense of reality in horror. I mean, because if you look at, like, Midsommar, or you look at, like, Hereditary, you look at a lot of their films, even The Lighthouse, a lot of their movies, The Witch, oh my God, I'm missing a bunch of them. A lot of their movies are built in that frame of mind where the sense of horror is not something like, oh, this is something so creepy and scary it's going to look like a monster straight out of like a Stan Winston film. No, this is a movie where the horrific thing is the depravity of the human mind. And so you're either going to get one of two. You're either going to get something really twisted and wicked, or you're going to get something really dramatic and really heart-wrenching. So, Amy, what were some of your thoughts in terms of expectations? Without giving anything away. And stop playing with that. You're literally playing with a little eyeball.
But it's a googly eye. Okay, so expectations. Much like Spencer, I really didn't have anything. Like, that. I think that was the best part for me. Seeing the trailer, it was just absolute bonkers. I saw faces of actors that I was very excited not only to see, but to experience. I adore Michelle Yeoh. Stephanie Hsu has become one of my new favorite actresses because of her role in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And it, for this one, I kind of actually followed suit with what Spencer was saying, because really, I know we've got Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness coming up, and I was like, am I going to be ready for this? Do I want to? And this was just, I was hoping that this would just be a take on a multiverse that I could track with, but that wouldn't get so caught up in itself that it was, it has to be a multiverse, or it's multiverse, everything's exploding, multiverse, that I could kind of follow and fall in love with the story. And yeah, that's pretty much my expectations.
In terms of mine, honestly, I have to, when you start throwing questions, when you start throwing trigger words like multiverse, and you start placing words like, you know, things like, you know, universe jumping and things like, people that have been giving out those little trigger words prior to the film, you have to, I almost have to attribute it to what I know. And when you talk about like multiverse, obviously this is not the only multiverse film we're going to have this year. Mm-hmm. And everything that has been building towards Multiverse of Madness, or Mom, everything that has been building towards that is all top of mind and fresh because I want to be prepared as much as I can for that film. This film, it was one of those things where I had a few expectations. Number one, how are they going to build not only this universe, but every universe? How are they going to create this establishment of understanding, like kind of the basis of reality in all universes? And how are they going to keep me engaged if there's only two people in this movie that I'm really interested in seeing, Jamie Lee Curtis and Michelle Yeoh? I wasn't too worried about how much action or effects were going to be in it because of the fact that the trailer itself is filled with CG. And if that's in the trailer, I can only imagine what everything else is going to be like. I think for me, the biggest expectation was, please don't let this just be too overhyped. Mm. Because everybody's talking about this movie.
Now
everybody, well, no, prior to, everybody was talking about this movie. Every critic, every person I know who is in the industry, every person that I know who has been anticipating this film, every Asian American or Pan American Asian, you know, individual who lives in the States or even outside of the States who is looking towards this film as a great opportunity for Asian representation in a sci-fi film in this year, I know they were also looking forward to this movie. And the fact is that I really didn't want this movie to fall flat. Like, everything was riding on that first act, to keep me engaged. And I was really hoping that this was going to live up to the expectations that nobody had, because nobody had seen the movie prior to that point. So, but let's talk first impressions. And Amy literally is about to explode. Amy, first impressions without giving anything away.
They kicked me in the Pixar feels. And it was unexpected. In the best freaking way.
So you got kicked in the Pixar balls? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, you know, Pixar always likes to grab you by the feels and shake you around a good bit. And then you're like, what did you just do?
I don't know. I don't know what this imagery is that you're conjuring, but okay, keep going.
But so it was entirely unexpected. I was ready to sit there and wait for an end credit, a mid credit, anything. I didn't want it to end, but where it ended was exactly where it needed to be and what I needed. There was so much going on, and there are so many different aspects you can talk about in this movie, and it lived up to its title in all of the best ways, which I never thought was possible.
Spencer.
I've never been more angry that a movie ended and then I had no way of possibly seeing it again.
Immediately, right?
Immediately.
Yes.
Because now we can go this weekend and we can go see it.
Yeah, but I couldn't before.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just... I've never... it was such a weird emotion. This movie throws a lot of weirdness at you and you end up in this weird place of being happy and angry and then kind of sad, but kind of it's just a mishmash of stuff going on with me and how they're doing the rollout. But yeah, that's where I was. And then also I was like, there is some very tough conversation coming to Marvel.
Yes.
In a way I was not expecting.
Right. I'm like, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because this was coherent with no backstory or any idea of what people are doing. It was coherent and it was a whole ride and they stuck a landing. And then also like Marvel has to really step up their game if they're going to compete with movies like this.
Yes. Yeah.
My first impression, I think director Mike Flanagan put it best on Twitter. He said, "Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is one of the best films I've ever seen, ever, in my whole life, ever. I was crying while smiling for well over an hour. Holy hell, I'm speechless." That is literally my sentiment. I agree with you 100%, Spencer, because the first issue I had as soon as that movie ended and the credits started rolling was, I have to go back to the outside world.
I get that.
I want to be a rock. There was so much. There was so much in this film that pulled you in, made you a part of its family, created a piece of ownership within you as you're watching this movie. You are so much invested, not only in the story elements of the main character, but you are well invested in every aspect of each character that is debuted. And they make a point. The film makes a point of showing you that every single person is important because every single person has this deep desire to be seen. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. There's a whole scene in the film where she's instead of fighting, she's actually finding the things that these people need and giving it to them, getting them satiated so they can be out of the way. That's literally fighting with kindness. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to put it. This movie completely changes the way filmmaking has to proceed when it comes to creative storytelling outside of just one singular universe. Because moving forward, I have to agree, Marvel seriously has to step up whatever they're going to show us with Multiverse of Madness, because plain and simple, and the reviews have said it, this has got to be the best multiverse film so far, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it goes without saying that a lot of that is built on the creative writing of the Daniels, as they call them, the
Daniels, yeah.
And the outstanding performances from the actors. And before we dive into any more of the information, I do have to state this is a spoiler review.
Yay!
We are going to talk about spoilers. We are going to talk about things in the film, because here's the thing: even though we may bring up spoilers, the fact remains is that there is still a heck of a journey that you can seriously cling to and enjoy and just be a part of. So be warned, we are going to talk about some things specifically pertaining to the film, but none of it will ever take away from the experience of actually seeing it in the theaters and getting a chance to watching this 2-hour long, you know, masterpiece. So again, spoiler warning, we're going to talk about this. And talking about the film, like I said, the outstanding performances. I mean, is there any other international treasure like Michelle Yeoh?
No.
Like,
no. We know. No. Only Yeoh.
I don't hate that slogan. Just saying. This performance from her, first off, this woman doesn't age.
Ever.
Like, every single time I see her in film, I'm like, didn't this woman like have a birthday? Like, isn't she like something? Which I think, Spencer, you had mentioned her age. How old is she?
59, I believe.
59. This woman looks like late 30s, early 40s. Like,
easily. Yeah.
I don't know how she's pulling that off.
I'm sorry.
I don't know.
It's like her birthday comes and she's like, no, thank you. And then just leaves.
I mean, if you were the physical embodiment of the birthday and you're like, I'm sorry, Michelle, but we, no, thank you. Okay.
You're like, I'll try again next year. Can we see? Yeah, we'll see. It'll be fine.
But her role in this film is something I haven't seen in a long time. And it's her almost at her most broken, at her most like, it's hard to explain the way you first see Michelle Yeoh in this film, because you see several variations of Michelle Yeoh. Mm-hmm. Michelle Yeoh. You see her as the movie star. You see her as the as the hot dog fingered one. You see her in several different variations. Mm. But the very first one you see is almost the most hardest to accept, not believe, because it's very believable, but it's like it's Michelle Yeoh barely hanging on, like barely keeping it together. And it almost takes you aback because you're watching this and you're like, oh my God, this is Michelle Yeoh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. This is every aspect of every movie that she's ever done where she's incredible and immaculate and, you know, stunning. And mind you, she was still stunning in this movie, but it was a very pared down kind of situation. And I from that moment forward, I was invested in wanting to see her character be more than that first few seconds of the movie. Like, that was my hook. If ever there was probably the quickest hook to any film, it was this movie, seeing somebody who is such a beloved actress in this industry be at such a low point, even though it's a film, seeing that on someone who you hold in high esteem and not knowing how to keep it together and wanting to see that person come to a position where they are healthier, they are better, they are stronger, they are made whole towards the tail end of the film, even if it's not like in a financial situation. But yeah, Michelle Yeoh was phenomenal. I don't know. What do you think, Amy?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. It's breathtaking to watch because everyone around her in regards to acting steps up and meets her at whatever level they are supposed to meet her at.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody feels this feels as much as a single actor, or I'm just gonna say actor across the board because they're all actors.
Yeah.
Each of them steps into a scene with Michelle. They are both simultaneously carrying equally as an ensemble, but also as supporting, and then simultaneously as the front runners. For me, I would love to talk about, I can never pronounce Key's last name.
Hui Kwan.
I want to call him Data. I really want to call him Data. But he is...
That's not his name,
I know. His name's Key. He was so unexpected because he plays his parts, and I say parts because there is multiverse mm-hmm. versions of him as well. He plays it so well and so seamlessly, and it is such a delight and a surprise. And then when we get to the end where we actively see how Michelle and Key's characters as husband and wife,
as a
married couple, finally sinks and comes together, it's so unexpected, but so wonderful and so genuine. And I'm like, man, Key, I thought I was going to, like, your voice was going to drive me nuts. And above all else, everything he acted, every face, every moment of unexpected joy and heartbreak and determination, it's just inspiring. It was great.
And by the way, his name is Waymond.
Yeah, I was looking it up. I was like, there's no R.
it is Waymond.
I thought it was supposed to be Raymond, but it's a Waymond. It's one of those ones that just came out of left field. I did not think that anyone was going to be able to balance so equally with Michelle in any of the scenes.
Yeah, and it's so effortless in this movie where she is always this strong character. She always, whether if it's in a sense of like stubbornness or a sense of power and just presence, that is just Michelle Yeoh in every film. He balances that out in his role as that character of the husband on such a equally yet still powerful kind of way, but much more in a passive element in this film. You come to find out like he is the yin to her yang, like, to not to sound cliche, but he pairs with her so well in every effort of showing what he has been for her all these years. And it's actually pretty incredible how the film moves in that element to unveil their relationship over the years and the decisions that have been made that led them to that point in that universe. And it's really interesting, just to kind of branch off really quick, how they define alternate universes. Because it does take a page, and I don't know if they took it from Marvel, but it does take the page from that explanation from the Ancient One, Tilda Swinton in Endgame, where she talks about how every change in the timeline creates a ripple and blah 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 blah, and you get all these things. But that's essentially how they establish the multiverse in this film. So it's very unique to see the consistency, because even now that I think about it, one of your favorite films does the same thing, Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he is so great in this movie. You could not sit here and tell me that he hasn't done an acting role in at least 18 years. You can't.
You can't.
He did do production work on The One, the Jet Li movie.
Oh.
But that's about it. Everything else is like, oh, little thing here, little thing there. It's crazy because for somebody who has not been on screen, for somebody who, as a younger person, where we've seen him, like you were saying, either as Data or as Short Round, you don't really see a lot of that little boy in this man that's grown.
No, you don't.
Because this person that we see before us is such a great actor, like a completely nuanced and just experienced actor. Like, I would put him up there with any other great actor right now. Like, I would love to see him in something like with Denzel, with, you know, Robert, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, like all them other actors. I can see him fitting in that well enough because of how well he did in this film. And how well he held his own with Michelle Yeoh. Yeoh. I got to get better into the habit of saying Michelle Yeoh.
I was saying Yeoh for a long time, too, until I heard her say it. And I was like, I'm fixing this right now.
What about you, Spence? Anybody else that you wanted to highlight?
See, normally in movies where, like, there's too many people to highlight, I'm like, who did the worst? And then even in this movie,
there's
nobody. Even the background characters,
right? The extras, the small, like the security people.
Yeah, we're gonna have to talk about those security guards later. But like, I'm gonna go with Stephanie Hsu, because like she was like having to like pivot like her like who she was from like scene to scene, because like, you know, like she'd be one version of Joy and then like all of a sudden another version of Joy is here and she has to act like this, and like she's just turning on a dime like a lot of the movie until like you get near the end, and it's pretty great watching her do that.
Yes, yeah. Jobu Topaki is her one of her alternate names, which no, we're all like, what?
Yeah, the first thing you know, I was like, I'm sorry, I need that said like five times so I can really understand how to say it.
Yeah, she, so Stephanie Hsu for Marvelous Miss Maisel, she's one of the background, not full background characters, but she's a smaller part in the main storyline. She doesn't really interact with the full main cast a lot. She's playing the girlfriend of the ex-husband, but she's brilliant. She is so quick. She turns, she's fierce, she's strong, she's like driven, she's so much dry sarcasm. It's brilliant. And the moments that you see the little bits of gentleness, they're there and then they're gone. And in this, I was like, "Whoa, I don't know who you are, but you're amazing. Keep going. Please don't stop." Like, I can't. We're struggling with her initial, like, trying to just introduce her girlfriend to her grandfather, and she's being bogarted by her mother about how to kind of explain it.
Which the grandfather is played by the illustrious James Hong.
James Hong. Gosh, see, there's no bad people in this movie.
I know, it's crazy. Which I have to admit, Spencer, you said something at the theater that really did stick out. Mm. And you had mentioned that it's been a long time since we've seen James Hong in a live-action film. Because not too long ago, we did the review of Turning Red, and one of the gentlemen, the high priest or whatever he is.
The high shaman.
He is voiced by James Hong. And I'm not going to lie. He plays a very frail older man in the grandfather in the beginning of the film, and you're like, oh man, it's been a long time.
Looks like he's gonna fall apart. I was scared,
and you're like, oh my god, it's been so long. And then like not even like 30-40 minutes into the movie, the alternate universe of his character jumps into him, and he's like all animated and everything, and he's talking, and I'm like, oh, he's okay. Yeah. Never mind. We're fine.
It's fine. It was just acting.
Like, but that was straight up scary, because we haven't seen him. The last time I remember seeing him, he was doing a cameo on something, and it must have been late 90s, early 2000s, where it was like a teeny tiny cameo. But this, I was like, oh, dang, he looks so like... He looks like he's not doing okay. And then he's threatening people with weapons, and he's like... bossing people around, and you're like, oh dang,
holding guns to people and
repeatedly.
Yeah,
when I first saw him in this movie, I was like, oh, he's gonna go soon. I'm scared. But then like near the end, I was like, okay, we're okay for a while, we're fine.
Oddly enough, really quick, going back to what you're mentioning earlier for
Stephanie
Hsu, mm-hmm. She actually is a part of a series on Hulu called The Path. So that's interesting, because it looks like she's consistently through it, and her name in that one is Joy. So I'm wondering, maybe, who knows?
I don't know. I mean, I really like her in Maisel. I'm kind of stuck.
Also, like, you have to admit, for a movie that has a lot of action and a lot of sequences like that, the stunt team in this film was phenomenal. Every person they had who was doing action were by far... people with the most amount of like humor in themselves when they're doing stuff, as well as like the most capable. In particular, two specific people, Brian Lee and Andy Lee.
Yes,
guys, we love you.
I looked them up because they were so great.
Well, Andy Lee. So there's a scene in the movie where part of the rewards for being with the IRS working with them is you get these very unique shaped trophies that look like things that go in
adult,
places.
Adult adult-looking things that go in places that are usually exits only.
And what's interesting about that is a thing I could believe the IRS does.
Right? It seems like it could be. And it's kind of scary.
How many times have you gone... Never mind. there's this underlying rule as part of jumping into individual people from different universes where you have to do something that's very unlikely and you can access a certain part of your universal like pathway to knowing information from another you from another universe. And so like
it's like a random yeah. They explain like a random algorithm. Basically there's a list of things that you can do to kind well if you have the tools that you can access. Doing something crazy and random will get you to whatever point you need to get to that universe.
Yeah, like
to download the info.
Like Waymond, when his other self from another universe is in him, he actually, in order for him to learn like how to fight really well, he has to eat like a whole tube of chapstick. And you're not too sure at that point, like what's going on until he explains
that
it.
That was so weird.
I was like,
we all were just like, what?
And really quickly, one of my favorite ones is like the initial one when Evelyn's being explained this. And she's like, oh, they're like, okay, just tell like this woman who's beating you up that you love her. And she's like, I love you. And it's like, and it's like, she's just constantly having to say it in different ways.
Yeah.
Until she finds the right one. And then there's the one where Wayman has to give himself paper cuts between each of his fingers. Oh, yeah, that was fingers. Rough. Oh.
Yeah, that was rough to watch. But so the star of this film, the star scene of this movie, is a fight sequence between Michelle Yeoh and Brian Lee and Andy Lee, who one is a security guard, the other guy is just some rando who the jumper that's in him is like a soldier for the bad guys ultimately. And so ultimately the random algorithm thing that they have to do is they have to put something somewhere that it shouldn't be.
They have to insert something, insert things into places.
Yeah. And so it's a really incredible, like it's almost got like a Jackie Chan-esque vibe to it. Mm-hmm. When they're trying to, like Michelle Yeoh is pulling things away, not letting him do things, and then they're fighting over it, and then this massive guy out of nowhere just jumps. And but if you're not familiar, Andy Lee has been doing stunt work and special, you know, things like this for a while now. One of his more recent actual appearances was in Shang-Chi.
Oh, cool.
And Legend of the Ten Rings. He was the Death Dealer, the one
shut
warrior who had the white face.
Door.
That was him. That was Andy Lee.
Dang, get it, Andy.
I'm actually anxious to see if Brian is actually related, because that would be really interesting. But he was also in Shang-Chi as well, Brian Lee.
There is such enthusiasm and joy from all of the stunt teams, like the stunt team as a whole for this movie. And that sequence is just one that everyone was screaming. Like, there was laughter, there was shock, there was, like, every variation of scream except for horror. I think there might have been horror. There were a couple older ladies down towards the end of our row. But it was so... It in the weirdest way, it was one of the highlights of the movie.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting point. I don't want to move on without mentioning the appearance of this wonderful, absolute gem of an actress, and that is Jamie Lee Curtis.
Hex to
the yes. She plays a very ruthless IRS worker, who I guess in another universe she's kind of like a Neanderthal. I don't know what the heck she is in the other universe, where she walks around and she's kind of like hunched over and.
Oh, there's a couple, because so her name is Deirdre. In one version, when she jumps, she has the wrestler's persona.
Oh, that's right. Well, the person who jumped in her is the person who works for the bad guy, and that person accesses the wrestling part of her.
Still,
which is really weird. It's really crazy, like, to know that at one point in time Jamie Lee Curtis could have been a wrestler. She could have worked for Vince McMahon. It's really trippy.
Her physicality, every time somebody jumps, I think that's something that Jamie gives the most, like, the most to, the physicality, the sudden shift. like, I think you had pointed it out that she stood up straighter and her tummy disappeared when she had the one jump. And it's like, it was just so it's an unexpected delight.
Mm-hmm. But you know, as you're watching it, you know they're having fun. Like, every single person in there is having a blast. And that's probably the best part about it. I mean, in a movie like this, you can't help but not have fun with everything that's going on. One last person to mention, the only reason why I mention is because she probably had the one scene that made me laugh out loud, and that's Jenny Slate.
More than once you were scream laughing too.
It was ridiculous. This woman, so Jenny Slate, which, mind you, if you look at her credits in this film, she goes by Big Nose. Jenny Slate in this movie is essentially somebody who is inhabited by a jumper, and she ends up fighting Michelle Yeoh in a very unique way. Mm-hmm. Let me just say this. This movie is full of surprises. This movie sincerely, truly had me not even guessing what was going to happen next, because even if I guessed it, I was still so far off. I was in the next town over. There were so many elements of this movie that just definitely created this, not even like a choose your own adventure. It was like this massive, how far can your imagination go? We're literally on the other side of town with where you're at.
Yeah.
Like, that's how this movie works. Jenny Slate was funny, and she had a great scene. And so kudos to her for being in a movie like this. But I want to talk about the story. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not a normal time traveling or time jumping story. We've seen movies where the element of the part of the elements of the plot is to either, you know, fix time, change time, go back in time, go forward in time, or discover different aspects on the same time. We've had a lot of this coming up with Marvel. Everything leading up to Endgame, which was what, 22 films?
Yep.
I think about 22 films leading up to the final film that kind of transcends what it really means to, you know, be a Marvel superhero going through time. We have been kind of inundated with this for a while now, especially with the expectations of Multiverse of Madness and other films. But even in that aspect, even with that mindset, there's still so much of this movie that is fresh and brand new. And even if there are elements that have been said over in other films, it still felt like it was a fresh take. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think, Amy?
I mean, it. I'm trying to formulate the best way to say this. It creates, I think, the first time we had any experience, I know for me personally, any experience with a multiverse or multiple timelines is going to be Back to the Future.
Hmm.
So how I saw multiple timelines was really shaped by that. And this, there was so much care and consideration for it that it didn't drive. The only thing I could think for in relation to Marvel was step up your game.
Yeah.
That was it. For every comic book multiverse that I have read, every video game variation where you can choose, you know, your one choice here, you're nice to the cloaked stranger type of jam, and your life does this. All of those literally fell to the wayside, and I was like, this is the embodiment of a true multiverse at, like, the base level, the butterfly effect, all the different timelines.
Which is another movie about.
Yes, that's why I said the butterfly effect. I haven't seen it, but I know. That's bad.
It is.
But this, yeah, all I could think of is everybody else needs to step up their game. Like, just at a straight base, like, they're at the nope, there's nothing else.
I mean, we've had movies that have talked about this at length. I mean, you got Looper, you know, you have The One with Jet Li.
It's great.
Yeah, definitely a great film. I mean, there are so many different movies you had mentioned.
Butterfly Effect.
Dennis Quaid in Frequency with Jim Caviezel, all about the different universes where the dad is on one, you know, he's essentially in a parallel time, you know, communicating with his son via this ham radio. interesting movie. I liked it. No, I really liked it. I mean, you get some of it in like Edge of Tomorrow, but not in the framework where the actual person who is traveling into different universes is still sitting in the same seat. Like, I think that's one of the most like fresh ways to look at it. Like, you're not traveling. Your mind or the essence of who you are is what's traveling into other universes, getting glimpses. Because it's so great how they create that composition on screen where you have this fracture, and Michelle Yeoh is simultaneously sitting in the chair in front of Deidre while at the IRS, and the other part of her is in the closet talking to her other husband from another universe. And it's great how they create that juxtaposition on screen. It's unique. It's totally new. Because typically, what has been the MO for most time traveling or parallel universe type movies
is you go there and then you're just gone from like your original place.
Exactly.
Until you walk back.
Yeah.
The only time I think we can see something different than that would be with the astral planes. And so if you go to the mirror plane, but even then you're still physically, you're still moving into some aspect. The only time I think, I'm even thinking of No Way Home, where he pushes him out and he's in the two spaces, he's there and he's not there. And I'm like, you're still going.
And that's just like, that's just a reflection of the current universe. Mm-hmm. So it's, I don't know, like I like the idea of creating this world or directors creating this sense of a universe, if you will, or a world, like a fantastical world, where you do not have to be like Bruce Willis, you do not have to be Jim Caviezel, you don't even have to be Spider-Man to understand or to even be in a film that has to do with multiple universes. Mm-hmm. You can be somebody as simple as, you know, Michelle Yeoh's character who just owns a failing laundromat. You know, it's definitely a fresh take, and definitely one that I feel could essentially change the name of the game for all movies coming up that have to do with either time travel or parallel universes or alternate universes.
What I find so interesting about what they did with like showcasing, like, you know, her being in multiple places is how they also were able to make this coherent. Because like, there is so much in this movie just in general where I could see them just, they got lost in what they were trying to do and everything went off the rails. Yeah. But there is something about like everything is just like tightened in a way to where like, yeah, it's confusing for a second, but like let someone explain it to Evelyn and then you as the audience also understand what is happening. Like, she is in both places. Like, she has to still look like she's paying attention at Deirdre while she's having a conversation and trying not to leak between like the universes. And it's really interesting to me, just like the whole like setup of how they had to like keep this all make sense.
No, it's true, because you take any story element that has to do with multiple universes without setting the precedent in a prior film or creating a base of a base level of understanding in somewhere else, like a book or like, you know, information. Like one of the things that they did with Pacific Rim, Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim, before it debuted, they actually came out with a comic book as well as a short film that debuted prior to the movie, which
they
helped people.
Primered you?
Yeah. So
I've never experienced any of those, and I understood the concept of that world. Mm-hmm. And now I'm wondering if I had had access to that, would I had a better and more rounded experience. I still like the movie.
Yeah. No, it's like the comics and the short film, or the comics mostly explain like Stacker Pentecost, Idris Elba's character. It kind of explains what happens while he's in that one Jaeger where his partner dies. His partner was his wife, and the kind of thing that transpires that causes that, and ultimately what causes him to have to take those radiation pills and so forth. But it adds a little bit more to the base of understanding part of the movie, so that way when you come in, there's almost like an added sense of appreciation, because you're like, oh, because that explained this. And so we're seeing this played out, but from the layman's perspective, as opposed to the personalized perspective given by the other material. You would expect something like this to have something like that to help people kind of tiptoe into this new world, but there wasn't. And the fact that it didn't need it says so much about the writing and the direction. I mean, there's not one part of this movie that I can honestly say would have been made better by X, Y, and Z. Like, there's nothing. There's no part of this movie. When I say this movie seriously takes what I could imagine and then goes a couple miles down the road to make it that much more crazy or weird, I mean it, because I stopped at the hour mark of trying to figure out what was going to happen next and just was like, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to watch this movie. Like, I'm trying to put like every logical hat and scientific hat on, and nope.
But when you get to Hot Dog World, like, you have to stop. Because everything just goes out the window.
So fast. It literally was a blink of an eye, and all of us were like, what?
What is happening?
And that's what this movie does so well, is like, sometimes it will set up offhand comments where, like, maybe there's a scene where Evelyn's, like, explaining, like, you know, oh, I'm jumping, and it's kind of like Ratatouille, and it's like, but she's saying it weird, like raccoons. And then
raccoony or something like that.
Something like that.
So we were all like, Ratatouille.
Yeah, Ratatouille. Her daughter Julie's like, Ratatouille? I don't know what this thing with raccoons is. And the amazing part is it comes back, and she's in a chef world where she walks into the kitchen, and there's a chef being controlled by a raccoon.
Who talks?
Yeah, the raccoon looks at her, and she's like, she's seen too much. And, like, he just controls his chef to go after her. She's like, ah! And, like
yeah, that's like, that's,
she
so
walked
crazy
into another movie we would kind of want to see.
It's like a Benihana's, and this tall hat is on this guy's head, and you're like, there's a raccoon under.
But it was completely unexpected. I love that it was completely unexpected. It was that turn, and the pivots were so quick and so precise that you're like, what? Oh my gosh, yes. Wait. Okay, go. Like, it was all the best things of a surprise, even when you hate surprises.
Yeah.
I feel like there's so much of this movie that has been created that could branch off into it, because even the one part that you're mentioning, the raccoony or raccatoony or whatever she calls it,
yeah,
like that whole universe where all that's happening, you're like, I think I want to know what happens with this raccoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because there's a whole story
how
that
the
plays
heck up. Did he get a raccoon that could talk and he became a chef?
What? I mean,
still fit in his tote.
Remy, like, and, you know, Linguini, just saying. Just, you know, I'm wondering if they even have, like, unique names like that.
But even then, Remy didn't speak, like, speak.
Yeah, Linguini. I mean,
he did not talk to him.
You know
he
what?
Squeaked.
If it didn't talk, it would have probably been too close to
that
Pixar.
That was like Rocket Raccoon in his hat.
that was probably another one of those moments where it elevated the amount of imagination I had, because I didn't think that they were going to go, like, I thought it was literally like, oh, she's just, you know, she's doesn't understand American culture and Ratatouille, she doesn't understand it. And then you go to a universe where she's pulled information from, and that's something that's there, and it's like, oh. And yeah, it just takes it to the nth degree, and then the amount of surprises that happen. And I'm just talking about this particular world.
There's so many more. There's more than five other worlds that we even temporarily get to experience. And I love that they actually put in footage for Michelle Yeoh when she's the movie star version of herself for Evelyn. And it's actual, like, even for a couple of seconds, it's like paparazzi, somebody's video camera, like, it's actual footage from her on a red carpet. I was
even in that montage, there are actual clips from Crazy Rich Asians, which they got permission to put that in there. So that's cool. In terms of the actual film itself as a whole, was there, and I know this is digging a little deep to try to figure out, but was there any part of this movie that you were like, that could have been better, or that could have been whatever? Like, any part of the movie that you think could have could have been... It's hard to even say it. Like, I don't want to say it could have been better, because there's not really much about this movie that could be better.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about this movie, is I don't have really any complaints about this movie, which is kind of a weird place for me to be in, but, like, when you're that good with, like, your directing and writing, and, like, your, like, effects team knows what they're doing, and everyone's on point, like... It kind of ends out like the best version of the movie it could have been.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't even know what, like, I don't even have any suggestions on how they could have made this better.
Let's flip this then. What is your best highlight of this movie? What is something that really stands out to you, one of those moments? I'll go first. I had mentioned it a little bit ago, in the simplicity of it, and yet the most unique and cheerful and positive way.
I hope you don't take mine.
There's a scene where Michelle Yeoh and her daughter Joy end up in a universe where everybody's a rock.
It's just them.
There's nobody else. They are literally inhabiting rocks, and there's no talking. It's literally all subtitles of the conversation, and it's a genuine conversation that they're having, but it's subtitles, and it's two rocks. And it's like, I have never been more engaged with two rocks being on screen than ever right now.
And white subtitles. They weren't even traditional black. Like, that was the thing when Evelyn gets there, and that was one of my favorite parts, too. When Michelle Yeoh's character Evelyn gets there, literally, Joy's rock... She doesn't even turn, but you could feel her, like, turn. And it's, oh, you're here, too. What is this? Like, it's going back and forth with, what is this place? And she's like, this is where life was never succeeded.
It never evolved.
And they're just two rocks. And then as it progresses, there is so... It's unexpected, because we come back and forth to that sequence with the rocks, too. Because they're jumping through each of the universes, and they end up still at the rocks at some point, which is great. I think, besides that sequence, which is so good... Gosh, flippin' darn it. The one that you get to see now as kind of the thumbnail, where Michelle Yeoh has the googly eye on her forehead and she's kind of covered in blood, it's a part of the climax of the movie, but it's not that particular scene as a whole in and of itself that is my favorite part. It's the sudden realization and the conversation that she has. Essentially, it's her monologue almost of why Waymond matters and what the universe sent her and why he's important. And she's saying this to the big bad as the big bad is trying to leave, and she finally understands not only why she needs Waymond, but why she needs to take on some of those things that he's been constantly trying to do, which he makes ways literally when there is no way. Mm-hmm. Or it doesn't seem like the logical, the smart thing to do. This should work, and it doesn't work. And yet, for some reason, he makes it work. And she's giving this entire soliloquy, and then it turns into meeting people where their needs are. And as you said at the top of the show, sating them so that they're no longer an obstacle. They're just there.
They're made whole, yeah. Like, in that moment.
Yeah, that's so
sweet. And the crazy thing about that scene as well, in the film, Evelyn is not only talking in one universe... She is, at this point in time, talking at the same time in all the universes. She's having that same conversation because, aptly so, all the universes are having that same kind of situation happening. And she is giving this monologue, as Amy mentions, to everybody. And it cuts to all the different universes where they're all having it. Even in the rock universe, this conversation is happening.
In the raccoon universe.
And it's like all these elements are...
The hot dog finger universe.
Like all these elements, they're happening simultaneously. And you're like, every single one of these situations fits. Like they've created all these different storylines and they've culminated to this one moment where the intersection of this is Michelle Yeoh's monologue. And it fits for everybody, you know. And it's just, it's incredible. Spencer, I know we took most of the good ones. Is there one that you might have?
I think I'm going to go with the scene where we're introduced to Jobu Tupaki.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Ooh.
Oh, that's right.
She was fierce. Just like, she pops out of an elevator wearing these ridiculous like clothes and like, and then just like turns a man's head into confetti.
Yeah.
And then is salsa dancing with someone. I was like, I don't, what?
Like, is she good? Is she bad? Like, what's happening?
Like, just pretty much any scene with her as Jobu Tepaki in it, I loved. Because, like, she had just such a weird line delivery as her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when she's, like, showing Evelyn the bagel that she made.
Yes.
She's like, I put a bagel with everything on it. Just like, I threw dogs on it. I threw cars. I threw all my old photos on it. And I'm like, what literally is happening in this movie? Like,
yep.
The big bad thing in the movie is a bagel?
An everything bagel. That, yeah.
Like, she was a joy to watch.
She was. And I think between the costume changes, the dynamic.
I love those costume changes.
I do not know how many costume changes Jobu Tepaki went through just that sequence for just walking down the hallway. Like, it was so many on so many points. And then, yeah, it boils down to an everything bagel. A cosmic everything bagel.
There you go. Wrapping this up, I do have a roundtable question for you guys.
We're not replacing anybody in this
cast.
No. No. On the contrary. The roundtable question for today's episode is, if there was one element of this movie that you would have to have or that you would want to see in Multiverse of Madness, what would it be?
I already know what it is.
All right, Spencer.
I want them to do something unexpected. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like Marvel, like, they're trying to be like, you know, we're brand new and exciting and fresh. I like that's what I kind of got what they were trying to do back in WandaVision.
Yeah.
Was do something that they hadn't done before and be kind of crazy. And my problem with WandaVision is while I loved it, I feel like they never went far enough.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they have to take a step where they need to be willing to potentially lose the audience.
Yeah.
Because, like, this is the thing this movie does. It's like, okay, we're going to do these crazy things. We might lose you. Hold on. This is, like, what this movie will do.
But, yeah.
Like, it's good at bringing people back in. And I feel like that's kind of what Marvel needs to get to is, like, they need to get to a point where they're willing to, like, risk it for the biscuit, man. Like, put there it all out there and try
I like that.
Something
Risk it
crazy.
For the biscuit. Yeah. I like that.
Nice.
Amy?
I like to point out that Michelle Yeoh is actually in both universes. She is in Marvel right Universe now. As well as in this one. So she's already achieved multiverses across everything. This sounds like what Spencer said is amazing. I would love to actively see Marvel take the risk and do something unexpected, risk it for the biscuit, hold on to your butts, like, let's go. For giggles, I would love to be able to see Jamie Lee Curtis randomly pop in, even in, it just would be super weird, and especially if she was Deirdre.
Oh my gosh.
Deirdre. That's...
Leave it to Sam Raimi to actually probably do something like that.
Like, there's... I think the expectation is now for comic book movies that of this type coming out of Marvel, Everything Everywhere All at Once raises the bar in such a way that it is daring Marvel to do better on purpose.
Well, it's daring everybody to do better in this element because, like I said, with all the films prior to now, there have been safe roads to take. The last time I have seen a movie that has to do with time travel or multiverses that actually took that risk, as Spencer has put it, risk it for the biscuit, was 2004's Primer. Like, Primer was such a random and weird rules applied type time traveling movie that you're like, wait a second, what? What is he doing? Why does he have headphones on? What's he listening to? Why is it like everything? It unravels itself, even though it starts out with all these very hard rules. And I haven't seen a movie like that since. It's not a very popular movie. Like, you ask anybody, have you ever seen Primer? And it's like, You mean Optimus Prime? Like, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about it's a movie that nobody really knows, and it's sad because that is a movie that is definitely worth putting now into the theaters.
Well, I think that people are becoming more and more hungry for stories that simultaneously tell and untell a story. And it this movie does that in spades. And when it comes to Marvel, as much as they are good, especially with Senior Feige at the helm, they are good at telling stories that comic book people want to see. I don't know how many people I could randomly take, literally somebody that does not have experience with Scarlet Witch or what happened prior to Multiverse of Madness. I don't think I could take them into that movie without literally giving them a full background and a primer before you go, this is why you should care about these people and this is what should matter. And Everything Everywhere All at Once doesn't need anything to do that. You literally walk in completely, you're unarmed, and it's brilliant.
Without knowledge, without information, without precedence.
And that really should be the thing that scares Marvel the most.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Because you're looking at a franchise that is built upon an existing medium that has been building that foundation for half a century. They better get things right. Like, there's no question about getting it right, though, with Marvel. It's getting it done good. Like, getting a solid film, because there's this amassing conversation with directors and everybody about, oh, Marvel's, you know, superhero movies are this, and they're no longer blah, 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 they're this, and this, and that. And yes, the conversation about superhero oversaturation in cinema is a conversation that needs to be had. But at the same time, if you transition your movies from being superhero movies to being cinematic movies that have superheroes in them, you change the game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, one of the things that I would wish they would take from Everything Everywhere All at Once into Multiverse of Madness is kind of like along the lines of what Spencer was saying. Don't be afraid to take the leap. Risk it for the biscuit. That's right. And even to the sense of saying, create rules only to break them. Like, create hard rules only so that you can show people that rules are meant to be broken. And even in a life or death situation, they have to be broken. And I think that's one of the things that I learned out of this movie, as far as, because if there's one thing that we know from Marvel, there was a huge emphasis on, oh, well, there's rules, and, you know, blah, 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 like with Endgame, when they were talking about time travel. Oh, there's rules, there's this and that. Yeah, there's going to be rules. There's always going to be rules. But break them and make it so that the reason why they're broken has to be more momentous than the movie itself. Create that. Create a cinematic experience. Create something that people aren't just going to come for the superhero. People are going to come for the full experience. People are going to come to see something they've never seen before. People want to come because they don't want to see the same old thing they've been seeing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, with Marvel and with DC, we're kind of getting into that phase where we have to see an elevation in the quality and the cinematic, like, aesthetic of the movies. Which, to be quite frank, we talked about this a couple weeks ago with Batman, with The Batman. That movie has such a unique and cinematic quality to it that I feel like it's, right now, that's one of the better films of the year, by far. And we're literally still in the first quarter. So, I don't know. I would love to see Marvel and Disney take that step. But then, at the same time, everything they're doing right now still kind of shows that they're putting on a show. It's kind of like the, oh, it's funny, me and Amy had this conversation yesterday, the Pepper's Ghost kind of effect. They're putting on this show of, yeah, we're doing this, we're doing that, and it's literally just cogs and wheels and mannequins.
And a sheet of glass.
Yeah, and I feel like there has to be more action on their end to show us that we're not just going to get another 22 movies of the same thing before we finally see something cinematic. You know, and mind you, there were gems in the last saga, if you will, the Infinity Saga. There were a few gems. There were also a few misses. But at the same time, there needs to be a sense of consistency now. You have everything you need. You should not miss the mark in terms of story. What you need to build is on that, something that we haven't seen before. So
I like that. And I'd also like to point out two of the executive producers, the Russos, for this
movie. Oh, yeah.
If they couldn't be on Multiverse of Madness, they'll be here.
But you want to know what? If all else fails, this is their multiverse. They put their money behind the dark horse. Yeah, the dark horse that it came out straight out the gate.
So wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. I want to get your guys' review or your guys' rating. Does it pass or fail? And how many monocles? Let's start with you, Amy.
This movie passes for me. Hello, was that even an option? There is, as I stated prior, this grabs you in the feels, much like Pixar does, shakes you around a bit in the best ways. You will feel so many things.
Every time you say that, I think of Monsters, Inc., when they're doing the interviews from the Harryhausen.
He shook me like a rag doll.
He got lasers out of his eyes. And
he flew across the room with his laser vision. Yeah. It is an unexpected delight that you will immediately, as Spencer pointed out, want to see as soon as the credits start rolling. So this is, of course, 5 out of 5 monocles, regardless of if you are in this universe or the next.
Spencer!
This movie passes for me.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, honestly, if they had walked out at the end of the first showing, it's like, yeah, there's a thing we have to do, and we're just going to play it again, so if you want to hang out, you can. I'd be like, heck yes!
Let the meter run. I will watch this movie again.
I'll get an Uber home. I don't even care. this movie was fan-freaking-tastic, and I'm so glad I saw it. And I recommend everyone else see it. And I also recommend you see it quickly. I don't know why. I get that vibe that they're going to, it'll be in the theater and then get pulled out real fast, too. I don't know why, but, it has me concerned. See it before it leaves, or buy it if it's already left and you're listening to this.
Pre-order. Right. Pre-order.
Pre-order now.
Can't do anything. Pre-order now, please.
So 5 out of 5, because this movie was just a fantastic trip.
There you go. Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Trip is a good point to put it. This movie definitely has so much going for it, so much fluidity. The story is so rich and fulfilling. It's like a full 5-course artisanal meal. Like, every part about this movie just feeds into every aspect of what I want when I see any movie, not just a specific movie, every movie. This movie had me laughing, crying, had me worried, had me at the edge of my seat. It had me falling in love. Every part of this movie filled every nook and cranny of what I would want in a cinematic experience. And so, honestly, this movie passes for me, and without a doubt, it is a definitive 5 monocle movie. And I know we've usually used the 5 monocle accolade, if you will, for movies out there that maybe not everybody might agree, and maybe not everybody at the table might agree, but I feel like this movie is going to sincerely go down in history as a benchmark for what time travel and parallel universe movies should be. Take note, 2022 gave us probably one of the best movies of this generation.
Yep.
Plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can catch us on every streaming platform where you find podcasts, over at iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, and TuneIn. You can tune into each and every one of those places. Find our podcast, The Filmlosophers. Give us a subscribe. Even if you give us a listen, give us a 5-star review. I think we've earned it. You think we've earned it?
We've earned it.
And googly eyes. Speaking of googly eyes, you can also find us on the socials over at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. You can catch all of our photos and pictures there, as well as Spencer's big score segments that we'll be putting on there. And as well, you can find Amy with Jane on Scene on our Instagram page, as well as her own.
Yes, at Jane Unseen. When I get to that In a couple of other universes, it's fully fleshed out. It's got like a great followership. This universe,
yeah. So if you can Google an alternate version of Jaina and Sane, you'll see everything you expect to.
Yes.
Oh wow. You can also catch all of our episodes over at our website at filmlossifers.com. We have over 300 episodes. Everything ranging from romance to action to anime to comedy, even great conversations with a lot of our friends and people in the industry. Check us out, filmlossifers.com. Everything is there. Anything that you're looking for, we got it. Like I said, this movie is an absolute gem, and if you're looking for anything to see this upcoming weekend, please do not hesitate. Forgo all other movies, because this is the movie you need to see. Michelle Yeoh, I forget his name.
We can't call you Date anymore, but we really want to.
Ki Hui Kwan, Stephanie Hsu, Jenny Slate, Jamie Lee Curtis, James Hong, you all did immaculate in this movie, and we salute you. So,
especially the stunt team.
So, from all of us here at the Filmlossifers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.